back to Winning with Data. I'm your host, Jake Schuster.
Alec Coughlin, riding shotgun.
And we're here with Matt Ober of Social Leverage. Welcome, Matt.
Nice to be here, guys.
Great to have you. So, full disclosure at the top, Matt is an investor in Gemini through his fund that he is a partner at, Social Leverage. But I'm excited to talk to Matt today about all of the things that brought us together. So, you know, it's often said that the financial services world kind of leads the way in tech innovation, which is often true, but not always. What caught your eye about what we do here? And this is not a podcast about Gemini, but I do want to get that out in the open. What did you see that could happen in sports that has happened in the financial
world? Yeah, I mean, I think funny thing is when we first met, it reminded me, you know, started my career at Bloomberg. And quickly when I was at Bloomberg, for everybody that doesn't know, Bloomberg is like the financial terminal that everybody uses in the hedge fund and banking world to understand what's happening in the markets. They quickly created like Bloomberg Sports while I was there. This was probably back in 06, 07. And I think it was a great idea. Like, shouldn't everybody that's managing a professional sports team think about their players like, you know, a portfolio manager thinks about their stocks? Made a lot of sense. I just don't think that sports was really ready for that. You know, it takes a lot of data, a whole change in mindset. And I think Bloomberg thought they could just take the terminal and switch out stocks and just put in players. And it's just data and charts and it'll be easy and everybody will be running. And I think we quickly realized like awesome idea, but maybe 10 to 15 years too early. So fast forward to meeting Jake, you know, I worked at two large hedge funds. I was a data robot user, worked at a lot of places that said like, hey, let's use AI, let's leverage data, let's do innovation. And I think when Jake was building, I was like, this makes a ton of sense. Also helped that some of the smartest minds in quantitative hedge funds I had met over the years were leaving to go to sports teams. So I think it was just a collision of everything at the same time that was a pretty simple decision for us at Social Leverage.
Yeah, and you mentioned that a lot of really, really smart, amazingly skilled and talented people working in sports teams right now, they're not always equipped with the tooling that they might need to do the work that they did in their previous roles. You mentioned Data Robot. Can you talk a bit about the data stack and the tech stack that you used in your different stops around the financial world that helped enable the really, really skilled people in the room to deliver the insights that you did?
Yeah, I mean, so I started at a quantitative hedge fund where we probably had some of the smartest PhDs in the world. You know, we had 1,600 people there and almost everybody there was a rocket scientist. And, you know, we built everything. Right? Tried to ingest more data than anybody else in the world to manage more money. And I think what you learned quickly was like, you don't have to build everything. There's a lot of great companies that are building the tools necessary to do your job. So I think that was a quick learning. I think we also learned that like, listen, if you do have such rich data and information, both, you know, that you collect publicly from, you know, around the web, that you buy from vendors, that you build internally, getting all that data in one easy place is the best way to get the most out of your best talent, right? The best data scientists in the world don't want to be doing data collection, data monitoring, data munging, right? They want to get to work, right? Everybody wants to be a data scientist, but nobody wants to do the hard work. They want to actually do the, you know, the fun stuff they studied in their PhD or that they've been writing about. So I think that was very clear to me when I was at first hedge fund I worked at. We kind of built this factory to allow the best people to do what they're best at and get rid of all the other pieces, whether you're working with external vendors or having people in those roles to really, you know, put everything in the researcher's hands. Fast forward, I went to a place that was more of a traditional hedge fund, right? We had no technology. I remember the first like couple weeks, the owner of the fund said to me, like, how are we going to use AI? And I was like, we're not. We don't even have data. Like, we don't even have the cloud, let alone like data in an easy place to like understand what we're doing. And who cares even about the external data? Even our internal data wasn't in an easy fashion for me to hire, you know, great data scientists. So I think, you know, we started leveraging AWS like everybody else, you know, experimented with Google because they had maybe better, you know, machine learning tools at the time, and slowly realized, you know, Data Robot was great because it allowed us to speed up a lot of the work we were trying to perform. And then it was really about how do you get all this external data that we want to consume, feed it in, monitor it, make sure it's coming in, combine it, right? Tie it all to, you know, an identifier. How do you know Apple across, you know, five different data sets? And then really push out work. And I think, you know, similar to maybe a sports organization, you know, the data science team was having to speak to traditional investors, right? That didn't think about it from a math perspective. They're trying to make decisions. Should we invest in this company? Should we acquire this company and why? And, you know, simplifying that, right? correlation was considered, you know, like a new like revolution in insight, right? Like how correlated are the two lines, and you know, how much of the two lines follow each other on the chart? That was like what we were trying to get to. And that alone took years. So when I think about sports and I talk about what you guys are building at Gemini, I feel like it's very similar to, you know, the organizations in sports, like my favorite teams, the Warriors, the Niners. Like, I doubt Steve Kerr is asking the data science team these math questions. It's probably more of like, how many minutes should we play this player? What would happen if we put somebody else into the lineup, right? Being able to answer that in a simple way and understand that, I think is what's exciting.
You're covering too much all at once, man. This is good stuff. So two questions in a sequence. One, you mentioned, you know, we weren't even on the cloud. There might be some listeners thinking, oh, well, we're not on the cloud. And you know, these big vendors out there are pitching us on their solutions. Why should I be on a cloud? And how do I know which one to choose? So I'd love for you to dive into that, you know, and really feel free to name names if you want. And the second part is you mentioned Data Robot to do things faster. A lot of folks are not necessarily thinking about doing things faster because it's their first, you know, decade working with any kind of data talent. And so anything that they come up with is really exciting, but few would claim that they get every question answered. So how did you convince really smart and technical people to use a tool that might have taken some control away, but allowed them to do more faster?
Yeah, I mean, I think on the cloud perspective, I don't think you have to get rid of on-premise solutions or get away from some of the data warehousing maybe you're using. I think what the cloud provides is a way for maybe these R&D teams, these, you know, more innovative teams to just be able to play in their own environment, spin up and down the resources they need. And, you know, for a long time, when we built it as almost like a separate, you know, business solution in the corner, and then slowly migrated that for everybody to get comfortable with, right? And understand the security. What's great about the cloud at this point is like, you don't have to do it yourself, right? Amazon, Google, Microsoft have teams that will help you with everything from networking to security to cyber to make sure that your cloud is safe. But realistically, if you think about, you know, all these modern day companies are being built cloud first. And, you know, you joke, you know, 10 years ago, everybody would had the cloud in their PowerPoint being like, this is how we're going to scale faster than everybody else. At this point, cloud is just another piece of the infrastructure. Whether you need that for everything is, you know, up in the air, but it does allow you to have teams build in their own silo and be able to deliver what they need to without having to have everything go through a much larger IT review process in many cases, which I think is what helped us kind of, you know, get to the place we wanted to be. In terms of Data Robot, like, listen, I don't disagree. Like, you know, the smartest data scientists and data engineers are going to be like, why would we use something like that? We could build it ourselves. Like, we want to build this ground floor up, you know, from the very beginning. That all sounds great, but, you know, like at the end of the day, organizations need results and you can leverage great tools that are out there like Data Robot. There's a reason why Fortune 500 and some of the, you know, largest organizations in the world are using it. Leverage it and then, you know, scale off of that, right? Like, it allows you to, you know, not everything has to be for speed, but you also don't want to, you know, waste cycles trying to rebuild infrastructure that's been out there for, you know, Data Robot's been around for years. So I think over time, the smartest data scientists that I had saw what their capabilities were, you know, realized you could leverage it from an API perspective. It didn't all have to be, you know, a front end grab click, but also the front end that they offered allowed them to get across what they were trying to build for, you know, a traditional investment professional that had no idea what data science teams were doing within those four walls. It's on the leader of the organization to kind of level set for everybody and be like, listen, what we're trying to accomplish might take us 10 years to build. There's ways for us to get there faster now.
Matt, I got to jump in. That's a phenomenal way to break it down. And one of the things we have in common, besides a bit of love for the 49ers, can't say the same thing for the Warriors per se. They're fine. But the New York in me comes out on that one. But that being said, in the financial community and within finance in particular, one could draw parallels between where finance was maybe 8-10 years ago and your comments about Bloomberg Sports versus the timing now. One of the challenges we face quite often is we're talking to people on the other side of the table at a team where a technical leader might understand this stuff and want to lean in and move forward, yet there's some other people in that building that are non-technical and they're not seeing it. And as much as that technical leader, you know, wants us to help them and so on and so forth, there's a big gap between those that build and those that consume these models and so on and so forth. And in your experience, especially that leader who I think I might know who it is, it was like, hey, let's do AI. how did you kind of help affect change appropriately without having to help, you know, non-technical people become technical and technical people become non-technical? Like, what was your, what are a couple of examples of how you approach that?
Listen, I think the goal of the leader is to listen to both sides and deliver for what both teams need, right? The technical guys are going to want to build everything. They want the best compute. They want everything that they don't want to do kind of outsourced away. And they want to be able to work on the most difficult problems. The other side of the house needs answers. They need efficiency. And what you really got to do is you got to listen to the other side of the house, which is probably the revenue driven side of the house, or the side of the house that, you know, at the end of the day really matters. What is it about their day job that you can make easier? What are they ultimately trying to achieve every day? And give that to them. And from the technical perspective, like, give that to them, even if it's like not 100% automated, right? Like, that was always the thing with data science teams. Like, we want to automate everything. Listen, at the end of the day, like, these guys wanted it in a pretty chart that we couldn't produce anyway, but just doing it in Excel. If I can do 95% of it automated, and then it's one step to give it to them in Excel, but that gets the front office happy, I can now tell them, like, with this tool, we were able to do this in a week instead of a month, right? So I think, like, the key, you know, before we would build anything is like sitting down with the real stakeholders. And this for me was on the investment professional team, the analysts that were delivering to the PM or the PM that was delivering to our investors, and be like, what are we trying to accomplish? Right? We were always, you know, trying to make more money. But like, how do we do that? Like, what is the hardest part of your day job? How many, if you're spending 30 hours a week doing broker reading research, can we make this easier and more simplified? Do you know what to read, when to read it, why you're reading it? Right. And then back into that. And then realize with the technical team, like, your job here is to make them more successful. If they're more successful, we all win. So, like, not everything has to be the most complicated, crazy math experiment. Right. And if they understand that, and they understand that if we start delivering now, then in the future, we'll get to do even more complicated things. You got to get quick wins. Right. Quick wins aren't always automated. They're not, you know, the prettiest sometimes. But if you get those quick wins, then you can move on to more, you know, experimental stuff. I think that's what it really comes down to.
Yeah, you mentioned like the questions that business users ask every day. And that really lands where we get this almost kind of full circle thing where our teams might say, oh, predictive analytics, like, we're just trying to do the basics. Great, okay. Well, if you could semi-automate the basics, or if you do the basics in a more consistent and easily versioned and iterated way, then that's the launch pad from which to ask just a couple of predictive questions that really put you ahead. It doesn't have to be 50 different questions. It might be three asked really, really, really well. And so how have you seen the most successful organizations leverage that kind of crawl, walk, run in terms of what they're asking of their data teams and how they're evolving?
There's got to be the champion in the middle, right? Like, it's, you know, I wouldn't argue that I'm the most technical person, right? I sat in a chief data scientist seat. I don't think I'm going to sit here and win a coding competition. Nor am I going to like read a white paper and probably really understand how to like replicate it. But I think I know enough to be dangerous that like I can talk to the non-technical people and also respect the technical people, how difficult their day jobs are. But at the end of the day, like they've got to deliver for the people that are ultimately the leaders of the organization and the reason that this team was hired, right? A data science team has been hired to help the GM of the company or help the player development team, whatever it is, right? Like, not a data science team driving the whole organization. This isn't a quantitative data-driven sports team, right? That everything's been picked by a black box. If they recognize that, then like you got to also recognize that like if we want to be the most cutting edge team, we probably got to do some stuff for the first couple of years or first couple of months that like is not going to be fun and exciting, right? Just like, you know, building any organization, like data ingestion, data monitoring, getting like the infrastructure layer set. But if you could get rid of a lot of those pieces and work with the best like companies from the outside perspective, you can get there a lot quicker. And I think I learned a lot when I was at Third Point, which was not like a quantitative hedge fund, which is like, you have a small team, you can't build everything, right? You've got to partner with the best, right? Like, how do you have a small team and execute at the scale of a team 100x bigger than you? It's setting up the best partnerships in the world. And that's working with teams that like, if they weren't building a company, you'd probably hire those people, right? And that's how I kind of thought about things when we had, you know, at some point, maybe hundreds of vendors that we were working with.
Yeah, so let's take that and you know, put the investor hat back on. When you look at the explosion of AI right now, big, big hype cycle, but a lot of businesses like sports teams still just need basic analytics, data system automation. There was the rise of SaaS, and then there's tech-enabled services, and then there's genuine AI tools. And everyone wants just a simple natural language prompt, which is not realistic for most business cases yet. What are you seeing in the market in terms of what businesses are going to adopt in terms of the different vendors that they're taking on and what they do or don't provide?
I think at the end of the day, the big thing with AI and like the AI world we're living in is like it's going to become like cloud, where like most companies are just, it's going to be a part of your tech stack and we're not going to talk about it, right? You know, pitch decks 10 years ago talked about cloud is why we're going to be able to grow faster and disrupt the world. Now it's like, you don't have an AI slide or you're not the AI for X, like you're probably not raising funding. I don't think that's going to be the case in 5 years. You know, it's kind of like what we saw with blockchain. Blockchain was great. I have a bunch of companies in our portfolio that have blockchain. They don't even talk about it. It's back there in the tech stack. Doesn't matter. What really matters with AI, the only thing that really matters is the data, both your internal and your external data, your data moat, right? Because like, what are you going to train off of? What is your AI going to leverage if you don't have access to unique data? And like, everybody's web scraping right now, but it feels to me like kind of like the early years of Uber, where it's like, move fast, break things, and you know, hopefully we don't get in trouble in the future. Like, you can't web scrape the world and steal data. Like, it's just not allowed. Like, there's been cases that have fought this. So like, that's going to become an issue. So I think that, you know, companies are going to want to work with firms that can get them to the point of leveraging their own internal and external data, that's going to give them those tools, that have access to, you know, the four or five AI winners, whether that's Google or Facebook or OpenAI or Microsoft, and is integrating those things so that when you do have the right process, the right, you know, base infrastructure and the right data lake, you can actually leverage these cutting edge capabilities. I think that's really where the world's going.
Yeah, that's something that's been fascinating to me, especially as a non-technical founder the last few years, is watching the world go from like models and data sets being so black box and proprietary to, right, there's this open source, you know, battle happening right now. And you write a lot, especially with initial data offering, about how all of a sudden, you know, models are commoditized and so are data sets. And there's this race to leverage those two in parallel best. Can you talk about what you're seeing out in the field and what sports team might learn from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's looking to monetize data at this point, and I don't think it's changed any bit. I think it's like there's endless amounts of data and data sets being launched every day. Like you brought up initial data offering, which I you know, I put together a few months back, which is just a place for people to announce all of the data that they're working on, right? But like at the end of the day, it's going to come down to use cases, right? And I think for the sports team, like they can consume endless amounts of third-party data. They probably have unbelievable amounts of internal data. It's really going to come down to like, how do you actually store and make sense of what you actually already have and do that in a consistent manner and build the processes around it? And then figure, and then it goes down to like, at the end of the day, what are the questions we're trying to answer, right? Like, I think I remember this from my investment time, like, in the systematic side, it was like, oh, let's find patterns. And if they're random, they're random, doesn't matter. But we were systematically trading. But from a more fundamental perspective, and I think this is kind of more of how sports team thinks, it's going to be asking questions and seeing, can we get the answers from the data, or what type of data are we missing to fill that gap? And that data is not that hard to find, right? There's data hunting capabilities, you know, in any different fashions of the world right now where you can get access to data to answer any question, but it's figuring out what is that question to answer, right? And like, you know, I remember the funniest thing I always learned was like, we were doing an investment in a consumer company, and the analyst told me the only thing that matters is French fries, right? Nothing else matters. If I understand the price of French fries, the demand for French fries, what it costs to make the French fries, that will be the difference between us having a good year or a bad year, right? But as a data science person, I had no idea about that. But I did know how to get like potato pricing. I could see actually transaction data on buying French fries. I can give them more information than they ever thought possible. And not just on a quarterly basis when it was maybe released, but like almost on an intraday basis. But that conversation between me and that analyst to understand that that was the only thing that mattered, like that's the difference between a winning and losing organization, right? That's the difference between like the data science team actually being helpful.
We were talking about this the other day where, you know, we get really excited about sharing, you know, with everyone around scenario testing or, you know, natural language processing of scouting reports and all this fancy stuff. But, you know, there's a data vendor that we work with, and teams struggle to use it until it's contextualized into what was the game state, you know, Where on the field was the ball when this action happened? How far into the season was it? How far into the game was it? And those are all, like you said, pretty simple things to put together, but the people currently tasked with putting that together are drowning in ad hoc requests. So if that original data can be paired with those helper tables, all of a sudden it's more valuable.
Right. And I think, like, you know, where are we going with AI right now? Like, soon the front end, you know, the front office, whether that's sports or the finance side, are going to be able to ask questions in like a chat-like interface. And like, we've had chatbots forever, but if they can actually ask questions that can be answered by the data team or by an AI, that's what's going to be, you know, the game changer, right? Like, the most value my data science team ever had was like being able to look at like the research management system we had internally, understand the notes that they were taking and the questions they were trying to answer, right? Like, so now with AI, if we could like get a summary, like tell me what Jake has been thinking about XYZ before the meeting, then I can deliver the data that he's looking for, or we can start to prep our AI models to answer those questions. So when they're trying to search for something, they can just ask the question like, you know, if I'm trying to predict this, do we have any data for it? Done, right? That's where I think like these more verticalized AI and data solutions are going to be real winners over time.
I can't resist but jumping on that, Matt, not to have you put your product innovation and roadmap hat on, but go further, right? Because you're obviously not just an investor and someone who's deeply, you know, driven and focused on data science, but you're also a big sports fan. So keep going. And shout out to your writing, by the way. I want to make sure that people that are listening to this read this guy's writing. It's awesome.
Appreciate it.
But tell us a little bit more about what you think is interesting and some of the things you think that would be really cool for teams to be able to do in these arenas to take the next step in winning more games.
I mean, listen, I think it's like how I think about how an investment analyst thinks about their day, right? They come in and they want to ask questions about what's going on in the markets. Like, tell me, you know, the latest research that we have on Apple, and are there any analysts giving predictions that go against the thesis I wrote about in our pitch deck? And if so, summarize it for me and show me where I can actually see that in the filings, right? I think that is, you know, where the world's changing. So if I'm on the sports side, like, tell me about how many minutes you think we should be playing Steph Curry in the rest of the season. And based off of, you know, how many shots he's been taking the last couple games, should he continue on that? Or would it be better for us to tell him to slow down on his shot selection? What does the lineup look like with pods in the game versus pods not in the game when Steph's on the court? And then have the AI tell, like, here's the answers. And then say to me, and then be able to say, like, get me the research that we put together before the Timberwolves games for the last 5 years, summarize it for me. And what were the takeaways post game if those strategies worked? Like, that type of stuff is going to change the way, like, that's not predictive. That's just like from an efficiency standpoint, like what you do on a day to day is going to change. Like, what took maybe 40 hours for a team to put together in terms of research package should be conversational. And that's where your NLP stuff comes out, right? Like, everybody always says, oh, let's use NLP and our NLP is better than everybody else. But it's a use case, right? I don't want to read a million things. Summarize it for me.
Well, that's the biggest thing, isn't it? Is it's not, none of those questions that you asked are crazy. All of them could be asked over a 6-week research project. And they are. Like sports teams are asking and answering those questions. But they're not able to do it on a day-to-day in a way that's managed easily. I think when people see AI, they see use cases published, they think everything has to be so crazy advanced and sophisticated. That's not, it's about the convenience.
Yeah, I think it's like blockchain. Like, there's going to be consumer-based applications of it that you don't know blockchain's in the background. Like, what I just said about, like, quote-unquote leveraging data and AI, you know, it's not a artificial intelligent prediction of the world's going to end, or it's not like some crazy math problem that I'm trying to ask and not being like a, you know, a maths major. It's really just asking the questions that will take a few different data sets to put together, summarize and pushed out. And like, listen, the technology in the background is probably very cutting edge, and the data lake and how everything's organized is probably the most important. But that's where people want to go, right? Where it's like the average person can just talk into their phone and have thoughts and are thinking about like what they do for their normal day job, but now be able to do it in such a different way. You know, if I think about the financial world, like, analysts today are going to look very different than they do in 15 years. And I don't think, like, it's going to come down to them using the most relevant tools, right? They're going to think smarter, not harder. The way that they're going to win the seats from the guys that are getting older with more experience is they're going to be able to do what those guys do over a week. They're going to be able to do it in the first 30 minutes of the day.
Yes. All right, final two questions for me. First one is, what are some good resources that people can use to read up on all the things that we've been discussing today, besides your Seth Godin-esque concise blogging? And second one is, you know, if you're advising a team owner or general manager, what are 2 to 3 key initiatives that you would advise them to make to stay ahead of the curve?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would say most of the reading I do these days is probably some form of like a Beehive or a Substack newsletter from great writers. I'm blanking on the name, but there's an ex-Goldman guy that writes about AI once a day. We'll send a link afterwards, but he writes a great piece. You know, it probably takes you 2 minutes to read every night, but it keeps you up to date on everything happening. I like short form content where you can go deeper if you want to. So that's typically where I spend most of my time reading.
And what would be 2 to 3 steps you would advise a executive to take to stay ahead of the curve right now?
I think the power of the network, talking to people, right? Like spend time talking to people in other industries doing things, right? Like my success over my career has always been having a network of people you can rely on so that you can hire people smarter than you, right? Like there's no way I would have built or done anything in my career if I didn't hire people that were smarter than me and were able to execute on pieces of the business or the vision that we had. So I think that's important. And I think what's important about that too is it's not just like senior people at the highest levels of places, right? Like it could be the most junior person just understanding like what's difficult about their day job, or, you know, the basic sales guy within the organization and like how he spends his day. I think you can learn a lot from those things. And then I'm a big believer in like reading, like if you're not taking notes, reading, you know, other notes that have been taken. I think now in this world that we live in where you can get transcripts on every like Zoom call, I mean, I think it's a game changer to be able to like have access to that, especially if you look back, you know, a year or two from now.
I agree with that statement 1,000%. I appreciate it, Matt. It's really cool. And I think the audience really is going to benefit from this conversation.
Thanks for your time today.
I appreciate it, guys. It's been fun.